Good morning, everyone. Welcome to FBC Radio Live. It is Thursday, March 30th, 2023. It is opening day in Major League Baseball. And, John, I'm not going to lie. The same, indifference that I had last season for baseball or with baseball has kind of carried over to this season. Now, you know, again, obviously the World Baseball Classic was exciting. It was fun to watch that. But as I said to you right before we got on the air, my mentality, I'm tense right now. I'm tense because it's almost Stanley Cup playoff time. It's almost the playoffs in the NBA. And March/April baseball just isn't, just not doing it for me right now. Feel the same way?
Pretty much. I mean, are you in full playoff mode? Are you growing a beard now for the Bruins playoff run?
Look, in order for me to have a playoff beard, I would have had to start growing the beard like last year. So, no, I don't participate in that. It's only a... it's like when I put on a nice watch and I realize my wrists are incredibly small. It's really just... it's kind of humiliating and all that. So, no, I do not grow a beard. I just... I've seen a lot of the teams I follow win championships without having to grow a beard, so I guess that works oh well. But, you know, still the same, you know, the fun of the regular season, obviously the NHL with the Bruins, you know, they're still obviously on pace to break the wins record, and that's all fun. But at the end of the day, you're thinking, well, it's all about the playoffs at this point. And anything that really happens after or before, it doesn't not matter, but in a way, it's kind of, you know, lessened a bit if they fail in the playoffs. So, you know, there is this anxiousness, I guess, for this postseason to get going. But we're not going to talk about that. I do want to give baseball an look. I'm not trying to crap on baseball. I mean, it is exciting. I know there's a lot of people that are excited for opening day, and you know, at some point we're going to get around and be like, oh yeah, you know, it's great to be able to watch, you know, sit back, relax, and watch a game whenever you want, pretty much any day throughout the summer. So. Yeah, you know what? In a way, it is good. So I guess I'll ask you is, what are you most excited for, if you can find something, about this Major League Baseball season? Because I don't know. I don't know if an Astros repeat is something you want to see, or do you want to see your Giants have a bit of resurgence?
I can't see my Giants really contending. They're in such a strong division with the Dodgers and the Padres. I'm interested to see what happens with the San Diego Padres. They've built this super team. I'm not sure how they pay all these guys. I think a Russian oligarch owns the San Diego Padres and can lose whatever amount of money every year with the incredible talent that they've assembled there. I think that Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to come back from his suspension. I do think he's still the most exciting player in baseball, not named Shohei Ohtani, who, again, when he goes out there, is either going to pitch a no-hitter or hit three home runs in back-to-back games. That's a possibility with Shohei Ohtani. But in terms of pure athleticism, I think that Fernando Tatis Jr. is the most exciting player in baseball. I mean, his strikeouts are exciting. That's how talented he is. But now you add Xander Bogaerts to Manny Machado to Juan Soto. I mean, they've built a superpower there. And let's see if that works. Because it's kind of strange in baseball. As much as if it's an individual sport, you do rely on all your teammates because, you know, those guys can only get up four, maybe five times in a given game. So we'll see what the rest of their roster looks like. I think that's going to be the most interesting team to follow this year. And it's going to be in San Diego, which, you know, they've been to two World Series in their entire existence. And in both times, they just happen to run into all-time great teams, the 84 Tigers and the 98 Yankees. But I think they're going to be in play this year.
Well, and I know I've said this before, but, you know, and we've talked about it, like, you know, at the time of the Manny Machado signing, it's like, wow, you went to San Diego thinking, you know, this is one of, you know, they're essentially they were the West Coast Tampa Bay Rays. Now, not quite the Tampa Bay Rays because no team is like the Tampa Bay Rays when it comes to bargain hunting and paying a very small payroll number. So yeah, it is a bit surprising to now all of a sudden see them as a big spender. Obviously you get the names in there. Xander Bogaerts, obviously, as a Red Sox fan, I'm eager to see what, you know, he does over there and kind of, you know, see if he can move past all that. But yeah, I'm excited to see that. You already mentioned Ohtani and I think, you know, his impending free agency, I think is going to end up being the biggest storyline. Certainly if if and when the Angels are out of contention as we get towards the playoff, towards the trade deadline, is that something where the Angels would consider moving him? And
yeah, I think they have to, right? At that point, they can't look, let him walk away in free agency. Sure,
they've seen it happen all too many times in terms of just not being able to maximize the player's talent. If you know he's going to leave, or at least he's leaning towards it, you can't get nothing for this. Because mm-hmm. really, what do they have to show? Assuming you know this season goes as every other season has gone with the Angels and Ohtani, what do they have to show for it? A couple seasons of some highlights. And that's not a knock on Ohtani. That's just a knock on the Angels because they didn't do anything with it. You know, they were given the keys to this unique vehicle and, you know, just didn't really maximize it. So, yeah, look, if you're going to approach the trade deadline and you're out of contention or just pretty much... Yeah, I mean, if you're out of contention, you got to consider it because, well, think about the trade package you could get for him. Think about it because you're not, this isn't, first of all, you're dealing with a unique asset isn't even the appropriate term for it, but that's what we'll call it, a very unique asset. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, he's a top money hitter and a top money pitcher if he hits free agency. So what is that value? Well, you know, if you run them consecutively, you know, maybe $60 million. But anyways, you look at this player and he's a unique player. All right. Obviously, if you're a team acquiring him, the idea of also signing him to a long term deal is ideal and certainly something you would maybe not require, but it certainly is a high priority for most teams. But the point is, teams are going to be desperate. And what do desperate teams do? They overpay. And I'm just trying to imagine the overpay by a team like, say the Yankees, okay? Who maybe they're knocking on the door of going to another, you know, winning in another division and you know, they can see the World Series ahead of them. You don't think, void of, like, maybe he doesn't want to sign long-term, but they'll risk sending players over for a playoff run? You think they wouldn't do that? Of course they would.
The price won't be as high as it was for Juan Soto last year because Soto had two additional years left on his contract. So Soto in San Diego has this year and next year that he signed for. So True. You have some runway to appeal to the player. You're going to get at least 2.5 years out of him, and then you can make the big splash and sign him. With Ohtani, he's a pending free agent. So if this happens in July, you get a half a season for him. And look, he can obviously change teams' lives.
Well, I was going to say,
put him on the Mets or the Yankees, you know, now you're obviously favorite to win the World Series, but then you may lose him at the end of the season. So that's the risk.
Well, here's the thing, though, and this is how we were kind of talking about it when it comes to contract. If you acquire Ohtani, you're acquiring an elite pitcher and an elite hitter. So you're essentially acquiring two players. And like I said, I keep going back to the Yankees because, well, when you think of reckless spending, that's the first team that comes to mind. And look, I mean, I'm not knocking them for it. Certainly. I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I'm the last person to knock needless spending. Although, again, in more recent years, the Red Sox have been a little bit more frugal. But like, if you... You acquire Ohtani and he's sitting in that short left field in Yankee Stadium and he's pitching. You know what I mean? He's all of a sudden their second best pitcher, maybe best pitcher. That's a move where you're like, you know what? Even if he does walk at the end of the year, if it wins him a World Series, I think that's all that matters.
Well, they haven't won one since 2009. They've only won one since 2000, which that's a long drought for the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
In fact, they haven't even played in a World Series since 2009. They've seen the Red Sox go back several times. The Astros are now the dominant team in the American League. So, sure, the Yankees want to make that big push. And, again, they're not quite as aggressive in terms of spending as they were when George Steinbrenner was alive. It's interesting. He passed away in 2010. They haven't been in a World Series since. The Suns don't run the team the same way their dad did. So, you know, they're a little bit more conservative, although they did give the big contract to Aaron Judge. They had to. They had to re-sign Aaron Judge. You can't let that guy walk out the door. But, yeah, imagine Ohtani in either team in New York, right? I mean, I think the Mets with Steve Cohen, who just got an endless amount of cash that he wants to spend on this team is going to go there, whether it be at the trade deadline or in free agency. But it also is going to be a factor of where Ohtani wants to play. We hear reports that he wants to stay on the West Coast. So that puts the Dodgers, the Padres, the Giants, maybe Seattle, you know, those franchises in play. If that's where he wants to stay, then those teams will have a leg up on the East Coast teams.
Yeah, and look, I like the idea of the Giants, and I'm I'm going to keep riding that with you. I think I'm right there with you. I want to see him go to the Giants, and you know, it'd be fun to watch. There'd just be a lot of great imagery there. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, but you know, when it comes to you know acquiring at the trade deadline, that kind of goes out the window again. If you're a team like the Yankees, who are just we just need him now. If we lose him at the end of the year, it'll be worth it if we win the World Series, and that's a guy that. Dare I say you take a chance and you try to take that you know big home run swing you know pun intended so but yeah so I'll be interested to see how that plays out. Obviously, if the Angels are down early, expect that to become a more hot topic of conversation. If they're somehow in contention, maybe that changes things. And again, maybe that changes the outlook of his future with the team, but. I don't know. If you want to win consistently, I think that he has to get out of Los Angeles. So that's my opinion based on, well, 20 years of watching that team.
Mike Trout came up in 2012, and you can make a case that he's been the best player in baseball for a decade now. Mm-hmm. He's been for one postseason. He got swept by the Orioles back in 2014. He went 1-for-12 with a home run. And again, I don't hold postseason against players, especially when they've only gone there once. I mean, Ted Williams hit 200. In his one World Series appearance, we all agree Ted Williams is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, hitter of all time. Baseball's a little different than football or basketball. But, yeah, I mean, as great as Trout's been, they've been relatively irrelevant. They're relevant because of Trout and even more so now because of Ohtani, because we've never seen this before. You know, I mean, there have been guys that have pitched and hit, but not at this level.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not quite the hitter of Barry Bonds. He's not quite the pitcher of Roger Clemens, but he's not that far off, and he's rolled into one guy. I mean, it's amazing.
No, it really is. It's incredible, and that's why, again, it'll be fascinating to see how this all plays out this season. But anyways, like I said, we have a long way to go to see that because well, it's only day one of I don't know a lot of days, just a lot more than I can count.
6 months. Wow.
6 months. Yes, I know. That's why I'm saying like if you know, obviously the World Baseball Classic is coming back in 2026. Please don't have it at the end of the season because by the time it's over, I'm already burnt out from baseball and it's day one. You know, imagine how even, you know, hardcore fans are going to be come day 300 or 285 or whatever, you know? So, anyways, tonight, John, we get a treat between the, potentially between the two teams that might meet in the Eastern Conference final. For the second year in a row, or third year in a row, second year. I'm my mind's completely mush right now.
Well, they met in the second round last year.
Yeah, right.
They were in the second round last year.
Yeah, and then the Heat last year. I forgot about the Heat. I don't care about the Heat. anyways.
Don't sleep on them. They could be the first
round. I know.
Celtics. They're always a pain in the butt.
Yeah,
they are. I feel like the hockey team that just, you know, you can beat them, but it's going to be six games, and you're going to be bruised when you finish up.
Yeah. I mean, look, whatever. It is what it is. But, you know, look, I hope they, you know, it looks like, you know, they could end up meeting in the conference final this year, but you're going to get a matchup between them this tonight. Celtics with a tough loss the other night. But they've played better as of late. What, I think 7-2 in their last nine. How do you see this playing out in terms of... you know, who has the advantage going in? Obviously, Milwaukee's the one seed right now and have a few games in hand, but who do you think has the advantage going into this game?
Well, whoever wins tonight owns the tiebreaker because this is the third matchup of the season. They each have one win, but Milwaukee right now has a three-game lead over the Celtics, and the Celtics kind of blew it the other night with a no-show effort in Washington. If they had won that game, it would be two games with a chance to get down to one and own the tiebreaker. So it doesn't quite have the cachet that we expected this game to have. Milwaukee played last night, so we don't know who's going to play tonight. Are they going to load manage certain players? I would hope not. This is a national TV game by arguably the two best teams in basketball with still something at stake. I mean, Milwaukee's going to be the one seed, But this should be a marquee game, and, you know, maybe we find out later that Giannis isn't playing, or Drew Holiday isn't playing, or one of the Celtics isn't playing. And again, that's a big problem in the NBA with load management and stars missing big games. Giannis last night, in 32 minutes, had 38 points, 17 rebounds, and 12 assists. He was 14 of 18 from the floor. And imagine this, Ian. He didn't take a three-pointer last night. Incredible.
Yeah.
How this man isn't a favorite to win MVP, I have no clue.
Well, I was just going to ask you, because we had that conversation last week,
yeah,
you know, about the three, and I think we agreed, you know, Giannis should be favored, but, you know, clearly it seems like number three in this race.
Yeah, they have the best record in basketball, right? The only thing that may hurt Giannis and Embiid is they've played a half a dozen fewer games than Nikola Jokic, so Jokic may have that advantage over them, and Jokic is leading Denver to the best record in the Western Conference. Embiid sat out would have been an interesting confrontation earlier in the week against Denver. Earlier in the year, he dominated Jokic in a game in Philadelphia. So it's those three guys.
Yeah.
I can't see really anybody else getting first place votes, but there'll always be one, you know, outlier that will vote for someone else first overall for MVP. But yeah, Giannis to me is the best player in the league. And he should be MVP. His team has the best record. Just look at the numbers he's put up. And he's also, of the three guys, the best defensive player, which somehow people seem to forget. Jokic is not a good defender. Embiid's a good defender. Giannis is a great defender. And I think that should be the tiebreaker.
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, that's – but, you know, we know how these awards are given. They're offensive-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And they always will be. I mean, I get it. I understand. And you know, it makes sense. But, yeah, look, I'm with you, and maybe this will be like a race to the finish, because, look, I think it's close enough that if either of those two falter at all down the stretch, I'm talking about Jokic and Embiid, and Giannis just tears through the last, what, nine games that they have, you know, I could see it. I could see it, especially with this talk of Jokic fatigue. You know, is he really going to be among the elite members to win three straight NBA MVPs? Maybe voters do take that into account. I don't know. Should it be taken into account? No. If, you know, look, if a player deserves to win three straight MVPs, or at least in that season, if he was by far the favorite, he shouldn't be knocked for having previously won two straight. That shouldn't be a discussion, but it seems like that might play a factor in some voters' decisions. I don't know if it's necessarily going to here, but, you know, if anything, I do think that you need to take a second look at the Bucks, because, look, Giannis scored 38 points in a game that they won 149 to, what, 138?
Right, yeah, it was a high-scoring game. Yeah. Bet the over when Milwaukee plays Indiana, apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's outrageous. It's like an NBA. Those are like 2000s NBA All-Star game scores right there.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
But anyways, but before we go, though, we're going to have a kind of a short day today, and it's okay. Short days are good. Your guy, Mr. James, out in the West, and the Lakers are in the eighth spot in the West. Okay, 38-38. Are you feeling a Hulk Hogan-like Hulk up right now? You know, down in the dumps on the mat, looks like he's going to get pinned. Then all of a sudden, the arms start shaking, and I don't know if that was a neurological problem or just some sort of energy drink that he had. But either way, it pumped him up, and he was unstoppable after that. Are the Lakers making a bit of a late surge?
I think they can, absolutely. So now they're the eighth seed, which means they'll have to go through the play-in. I mean, 4 through 12 in the West is just within 3.5 games of each other, the teams are. So, you know, 1 week Golden State looks like a sure bet to maybe be the favorite in the West, even though they're only 40-37. And Dallas, which is only 3 games behind Golden State, they're 37-40. They're trending in the wrong direction. That's how close the West is. There's Denver. Then the level below is Memphis and Sacramento, and then a bunch of other teams. Although with Durant back now in Phoenix, I still think they're the favorite to win the West if he remains healthy. But yeah, once you get LeBron back playing at the level that we know he can play at, Anthony Davis has had a great year. He's missed a lot of games, but that's what Anthony Davis does every year. The key here is D'Angelo Russell becomes a really good third option for the Lakers. If you can keep those three guys out there and playing, I don't know, 32, 34 minutes a night, they have a chance, because the West isn't all that deep. You know, would if the Lakers end up as the seventh seed and they're playing Memphis in the first round, they could certainly beat Memphis. If they're the eighth seed, they could beat Denver, right? Because mm-hmm. Anthony Davis seems to own Nikola Jokic, and who's matching up against LeBron? They have a really good team, Denver, but I think the Lakers could certainly beat them, and wouldn't be surprising if they did. So this is the year in the West you could see the 7 beat the 2, the 8 beat the 1. You don't normally see that in the NBA, but the West is just that bunched up that the Lakers have a puncher's chance. I still think Phoenix is the team to beat, provided Durant's healthy,
yep.
And I would never count on Golden State because Curry and Thompson are playing at an elite level. But the Lakers certainly could shake things up if those three guys remain healthy.
Well, and I was just going to say before you brought it up, I think Kevin Durant's the most important player in the West right now, above mm-hmm. anyone else, more than Jokic, more than anyone. Because you're right, if he's healthy, Phoenix, I think based on, first of all, recent experience, you know, this isn't a team that hasn't been to, you know, the NBA Finals in decades, you know, it was just a few years ago. And, you know, I know it's a small sample size, but 3 games and, well, he looked pretty good. What was he shooting, like 68%, 69% from
Incredible.
The field or something like that? Yeah. And something that we've talked about, and you've obviously mentioned quite a bit, is he's the most acclimating or accommodating superstars in terms of, mm-hmm. Acclimating to your new surroundings. Like, you could just throw him into a mix. Conversely, you know, we look at Kyrie and the Mavericks right now, and not to say that it's in... I hate to say it, I think some of the blame has been, excuse me, unfairly shifted to Kyrie, but there's certainly blame to go around for him. But, you know, with Durant, you got to figure that, like, if he's healthy, he's going to look so good in that situation. And, it's definitely something that, I don't know, I look at him as being the most important player. Obviously, LeBron's going to play a role if they make the playoffs. You're right about Curry and Thompson. Never count them out. Obviously, Denver is the top team in the West, but this is about Kevin Durant. And if he's healthy and he plays, he's the most important player in the West.
And he's the most transferable superstar in the history of the sport. Like, you could put Kevin Durant in a time machine and send him back to 1997 and throw him into the Chicago Bulls roster, and he would fit in perfectly. About 3 trips down the court, he would have a connection with Michael Jordan. And it's just the way he plays. This is a guy who routinely goes out and goes 12 for 17 from the floor and scores 32 points. And you're like, he didn't shoot a lot, but he got 32 points. He's the most efficient great scorer I've ever seen, without question. I mean, obviously, a guy who can shoot 50% from the floor, 40 from 3, and 90 from the free throw line. And he just fits in because he's not ball dominant. He can score in a myriad of ways. So, yeah, his first 3 games, like you said, Ian, he was shooting 69% from the floor, 54% from 3. That's with a new team after being out for a month and a half.
Yeah.
Like, that's unheard of. You just plop him in there, and he's fine. And the thing about Denver, look, I picked them to win before the season started, so I'll stick with that. But they kind of have a feel of, like, the Tennessee Titans as a number one seed. Like, I mean, a few times we've seen the Titans as the number one seed in the AFC, and no one really feared them. In fact, 2 years ago, they were the one seed in the AFC, and Joe Burrow went in and beat them in the divisional round. So you kind of get that feeling a little bit with Denver as well.
Yeah, and look, I mean, part of that is, well, they've had a lot of good teams over the years. Good teams. You know, from some of the Carmelo Anthony teams to some of the teams mm-hmm. after that. They've always kind of been in contention, but never taken the next step. So why would we take them seriously now, you know? It's kind of like, you know, you gotta see it from them, okay, at this point. Look, the West is wide open. I mean, you look at the East, obviously, it's top heavy, but it's gonna be a dogfight between some of those teams. And even some of, like, you mentioned Miami, some of the lower seeded teams are capable of giving the top seeds a lot of trouble. Maybe not beat them, but you're not going to come out completely healthy or whatever. After a 6 or 5, 6 or 7 game series against them. So yeah, look, I mean, Kevin Durant's the most important player in the West. That Phoenix team, I think, immediately becomes the favorite just because A, they've been there and done that recently, so I think they have that to build on. Well, I mean, I guess A, that's 1A. 1B, obviously, Kevin Durant, and the competition. But it also opens the door for your guy LeBron to possibly make a little noise this postseason. So we'll see what happens. No update on Lamar Jackson or Aaron Rodgers, so maybe tomorrow that'll be the day and we can talk about that. But until then, we're going to say goodbye. And like I said, tomorrow maybe we'll get some Lamar Jackson and Aaron Rodgers news. So enjoy some baseball today, folks, if that's what you're excited for. If not, enjoy some Bucks Celtics tonight. Still going to try to figure out how to watch that because I don't get TNT for some reason. Excuse me, but I will figure it out. There's always a way, John. Life finds a way. Let me just remind everyone of that. So,
you're not an old guy. You should be able to find TNT. That's
well, no, it's not a matter of not finding it. It's a matter of I have Fubo TV, which is great because I can get the NBA pass. I get pretty much every sports channel I need, except they don't have TNT as an option. And that becomes a problem for national televised NBA games and some hockey games that also land on TNT. So we'll figure it out. So anyways, thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.